Choose life. Choose Christ. Please be seated. I have to begin with a confession. Confession's good for the soul, they say, so I'm ready to open up right now. I was for the Patriots last week, and they won a fantastic game. The quarterback played a fantastic game, and I was the only one in my family that was for the Patriots, and I usually, too, am for the underdog, but I figure they haven't won in so many years anyway. They probably won't miss it that much, and Patriots were on a roll, and let's see how many wins they can have. So it was a good game, wasn't it? I mean, admit it. And you won't hear anything more about football from this person here. That's it. Put the nail in the coffin right there. And we had a good run at it. Chargers, maybe not so good, but hope best to them in Los Angeles. They're going to need a lot of our prayers there. And I haven't made up my mind yet what team I'm going to be for next year, but probably a soccer game or so, a soccer team. Looks that way anyway. I'll be for San Diego. Let's go. San Diego, super. But the ability to make a concise and accurate decision on which way our life is going is one of the most hard things to do. But to have a successful life, you have to make accurate and decisive decisions. Those of you who are familiar with sports, or maybe even football for a little bit, might have heard about this college team whose starting quarterback was fantastic, but got injured in an accident, and he couldn't play. So the coach got the number two quarterback and had him all dressed up, and he fell ill, and he couldn't play either. And so this left only the freshman backup quarterback, who also was the punter of the team, so he knew what a football looked like, I guess, but absolutely no experience as quarterback, and especially on this team. It's a pretty good team. The coach had to throw him in because he had no other choice. So he gets out there, and the first down, but the ball was resting on their own 3-yard line. So the coach's main thought was to get them away from that 3-yard line and the goal line so they would have at least some room to punt the ball. So the coach said, and I quote, "Son, I want you to hand off to Jones over here. He's 300 pounds, and he knows how to run, and he's our fullback. So for the next 2 plays, let him run into the middle of the line and get as many yards as he can." "Okay, sir. Then I want you to punt." That was his strong point, was punting. So the young quarterback did as he was instructed. On the first play, he handed over to Jones. And almost miraculously, Jones found a hole in the tackle and ran 50 yards. The young quarterback, called the same play again, and once more, the miracle of miracles, Jones runs 45 yards. The fans were going crazy. The ball was on the opponent's 2-yard line, 6 feet short from a touchdown. Confidently, the team ball lined up precisely and quickly, and the young quarterback received the snap, stepped back, and punted the football into the crowd. As the team came back off the field, the coach angrily grabbed the young quarterback and asked him, and I quote again, "What in the world," and he said a few other things, "were you thinking about when you called that last play?" End of quote. The quarterback answered blankly, quote, "I was thinking, what a dumb coach we have." Well, at least we could all agree with that. The young quarterback was good at taking orders. The truth of the matter is that coaches today do not want their quarterbacks to make any decisions. It's all planned. Even the NFL, even in the pros, quarterbacks rarely take their own plays. The plays are sent in from the coach, from the bench. Now, obviously, we're not here this morning to talk any more football. But there is an important point here we need to see in our relationship with God. God has paid us the ultimate compliment. He allows us to call our own plays. God allows us to make our own decisions. When he created us in his own image and likeness, this was his primary characteristic with which he endowed us: the ability to choose. The Garden of Eden, beautiful place it was, Adam and Eve living forever, never getting sicker, getting even a cold, and having a great time, naming animals all over the place, paradise. They needed to sustain this. But in the middle of the garden, God planted a tree, a beautiful tree, the tree of knowledge of good and evil. Maybe it looked like an apple tree, we don't know. The moment he did that, though, he provided Adam and Eve with the opportunity to make a choice. They could obey his instructions, pretty plain, and live forever in paradise, pass it on to their children, or they could eat of the forbidden fruit and die. What an absurd choice, you say. Who would ever choose death over life? Yet people make that choice all the time. It was 50 years ago when the following notice first appeared on a cigarette package. Warning: the Surgeon General has determined that cigarette smoking is dangerous to your health. It marked a turning point in our society. Suddenly, we had to choose and make the fact that the link between tobacco and lung cancer, as well as heart disease and high blood pressure and a host of other diseases, was scientifically established. Did people quit smoking tobacco when that warning appeared? Millions did. But for many others, the habit was too well established. Very hard habit to back out of. Why would anyone choose to begin to smoke, you say? Why choose death when you can choose life? Yet there are teenagers this year who will still choose to take up the deadly habits, though fortunately, not nearly as many of them were when we were young, when I was young. In that respect, teenagers today are a lot smarter than we were, or I was. There is not a person in this room that is not aware of the dangers of alcohol and drug abuse. Yet there are people within the sound of my voice who would rather listen to the serpent saying, "Why, that won't happen to you," than to listen to the voice of reason of a loving God. Unfortunately, it is not only ourselves whom we sometimes hurt through the misuse of our freedom and our choices. There are people who treasure their marriages, but they are morally weak. They would not want to hurt their spouse for anything in the world, yet they are playing with fire, choosing perhaps the death of a very precious marriage relationship because of a moral weakness. I could go on giving many more examples. Some of us face a choice every day with the variety of unhealthy choices. Who in the world would choose death over life? Millions of people do it every day. And it was that way a few thousand years ago, as it is today. So it is with that urgency that Moses calls upon his people of Israel. And he gathers them together and tells them with this earnest plea: "This day I call upon you, and I call upon the heavens and the earth to witness to you against what I have set before you, life or death, blessings or curses, new choices, now you choose. Choose to be holy or not. For the life, the Lord has given you that choice. And we know what the choices are today. Numerous choices. And one of the keystones in making Christian choices is to know what God wants us to do. God has given us freedom to choose down on our own responsibilities, to control our own lives. We can choose our own desires. In the words of Elijah, how long, though, will you keep on choosing these options and opinions? And 1 Kings says, or in the words of Judah, of Joshua, but if you are unwilling to say yes to the Lord, who are you going to obey? Joshua 24. This brings me to the second point, and it's a hard one. While we are free to make our own choices, we do have to live with the consequences of those choices. If we abuse the freedom we have, we must pay the price. That's a truth, sad truth about life, isn't it? You do the crime, you pay the time. A very true story about a family of six named the Fergusons of Laguna Hills, California. They took a trip of a lifetime several years ago. It was a 10-day cruise on the Royal Caribbean's Legend of the Seas from Ensenada, Mexico, to Hilo, Hawaii. But halfway through the cruise, the ship came to a sudden halt. Seems like one of the children that were on the trip with them didn't want to be there. The reason? It was the Ferguson's youngest daughter, Kelly. She wanted to be with her boyfriend, who she missed immensely and couldn't stand to live without him for another day. Kelly was homesick for her boyfriend, who lived back there. She wanted to go back home instead of going through this boring, terrible journey with her family. So she decided to leave a couple of fake terrorist threats in one of the women's restrooms in the hopes that one of the ship's wardens or stewards would find them and the ship would finally return home. One of the notes said, and I quote, I have been sent on a mission to kill all Americans aboard this ship, the Legend, if we port on American soil. Oahu is American soil. Someone found this note. The ship dropped anchor in the waters off Oahu immediately. There the ship was. Then it was boarded by the FBI, 120 members of the Hawaiian Joint Terrorism Task Force, and the Coast Guard. An intense search ensued for biological, chemical, and explosive weapons aboard the ship, as well as interrogation of all crew members and 2,400 passengers. It cost the Coast Guard alone over $336,000. Kelly Ferguson was quickly singled out as the source of the notes. She was indicted by a federal grand jury under the U.S. Patriot Act and two counts of threatening acts of terrorism, each count punishable by the maximum sentence of 20 years in jail. Ultimately, years after the trial went on, she was sentenced to the minimum possible under the law. She is now serving 2 years in federal penitentiary prison with no chance of early release. Do you think that young woman ever thought her determination to go back home to her boyfriend would ever result in such a massive mess? Probably not. So many of the trials and tribulations of life are the result of bad intentions, bad decisions, unworthy actions, dishonest motives and means, and there is a price to be paid. God forgives us our misdeeds, but God does not suspend the laws of compensation and the consequences. What we sow, we weep and reap. We have the freedom to choose, but with the freedom goes the responsibility to choose life, not death. This brings us to the final thing to be said today. There is one choice that surpasses all others in importance. That, of course, is the decision to choose Christ. When Moses instructed the children of Israel to choose life, he was impressing upon them that they should obey the commandments of God. That's a good start. To obey the commandments was life in Moses' teachings. Of course, you and I have discovered something even more vital than commandments. We have discovered two of them when Christ says to love him with all our heart, soul, and mind, and our neighbor as ourselves. And he commands us that I am the way, the truth, and the life. To choose Jesus is to choose life. Millions of people throughout the ages have made the discovery, and it is the most important discovery that anyone can make. And I thank God you all have. Otherwise, you wouldn't be here. I have set before you life and death, said Moses. Oh, but that you would choose life, he says. It is an urgent plea that comes straight from the heart of God. It is directed to each and every one of us over and over again. God has given the gift of life, has chosen for us. Sometimes bad choices we make. However, they lead to negative consequences. Choose Christ and let him help you with all the rest of your choices. In other words, for heaven's sake, choose life. Choose Christ. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit, take a few moments to reflect on your choices.